Blog Talk Radio.
October 15th, 2012. I am your host, Tom Riddell, and hopefully coming along here soon. Don't see her on the switchboard yet. Will be Robin Eduardo. In a brief intro to today's show, we have on Kevin Folliard for the second time with his book this time around, Jay Carter and the Nightmare Gallery. So I hope you will stay tuned for him. Kevin will be on at about quarter after the hour. And just let you know, you're having a little bit of technical difficulty here, and I'm not sure that's why Robin is being held up or not, but I had a problem with the audio just before I went on, so hopefully she'll be able to make it in here, and everybody is hearing the show properly out there as it's being played right now. You can find us over at the Writer's Lounge blog, over at tomriddell.com/blog, and if you go over there, you, of course, can read all of the reviews that I've written in the 33 shows that we've done so far. And up in the upper left-hand corner of that page, you will find the Blog Talk Radio player, and you'll be able to listen to each and every show and look for your favorite author there. You can also, of course, find us on Facebook. We're over there in the Blog Talk Radio site. If you go to the top of the page, top of the show page, you will be able to find a link there that will send you over to the Facebook link. And please like us. We're moving up the numbers, and we're hoping by the end of the year that we'll reach the magic number of 2,000. So go ahead and have a like for us over there. And, of course, we are now on Twitter. So if you haven't, go over there and follow us. And, of course, you can always contact us at TWL11@yahoo.com. Upcoming guest authors for the next show would be Mick Ridgewell. He will be on October 29th with his book, Nightcrawler. And once again, this is a Halloween segment, and this is the month of all the scary stories that we've got from our authors out there. So I hope you are enjoying it so far. And last time we had Annie Wilder on with her book, The Trucker Ghost Stories, and we really appreciated you tuning in for that. She's doing very well with the book, and we hope to hear again from Annie sometime in the future. And also, of course, I have to plug Magic Pen Web Design. It offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Magic Pen Web Design promises that your website will be simple in content and easy to navigate, while also delivering an effective, eye-popping design that will attract an interest to the books you write, along with the other products or services that you offer. Magic Pen Web Design promises to work with you and to explore an option package that will be the most affordable for you. Fill out the estimate form over at magicpenwebdesign.com and let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And of course, today, with the caller instructions, as we always say, you can give us a call here after the author comes on the air at 626-213-5613 or toll free at 877-878-1436. And with that, I normally introduce my wonderful and talented co-host, and I don't know what's happening with her. It's very unlike her not to be here right now, but we will continue without her, and hopefully she'll be joining us shortly. In segment one, obviously, we do talk about writer's topics, and I didn't have a lot to talk about in writer's topics today, just to let you know that Halloween, of course, is upon us, and this is the time of year where people like ghost stories, and if you aren't into ghost stories and you don't believe in ghosts, there are people out there that do, and there's a lot of them. In fact, the numbers have been increasing over the years. As far as what I do on the side is I'm a paranormal investigator, and to many of you lay people out there, that would be a ghost hunter. So you've seen the shows on TV, you've seen Ghost Adventures, you've seen all the other ones that they provide you on all the channels. They're all over the place. And it's been my pleasure to be doing this now for, I'd say probably a year and a half. So I have totally changed my mind, and I'm not as skeptical as I used to be, but I am still skeptical as many people should be when they're involved with investigating ghosts and other paranormal activity. And it's been an interesting kind of thing for me, as I have been with many people out there investigated. And one of the things that we did or do is a thing called EVPs. And I find it very interesting that a lot of times you will have an electronic voice recorder playing, and when you play it back, you will pick up other voices. Now, those other voices apparently are from the dead. And this is interesting, something I came across here from a gentleman, a retired West German fire equipment inspector. His name is Klaus Schreiber, channels in a very literal way. Mostly he does it with his television set. He's got several television sets that he has on and tries to communicate. I think there was a movie, it's escaped my mind now, where a little girl appears in the static, sort of the snowy static, and she invites the little boy to come into the screen. Well, in this case, getting back to this gentleman, this Klaus Schreiber, Schreiber was quaffing a few beers with friends one spring day in 1982 when talk turned to a radio program about messages from other dimensions. And half in jest, Schreiber suggested trying to contact a recently departed friend, Peter, with a tape recorder. And what he said was, "Hello, Peter, where are you?" Schreiber asked into the machine. "Come on over and have a drink." After about 10 minutes of silence, Schreiber switched off the recorder, rewound the tape, and hit the replay button. He and his friends heard his invitation, then nothing but a long, low hum. He was about to turn the machine off when suddenly a voice said, "Hello, friends." All present identified the voice as Peter's. And shortly thereafter, Schreiber's cronies left his house. Shaken by the experience, most never return. Okay, so there's an example of something happening that is unexplainable, and pretty much that's what we use a lot. We're not saying that they're ghosts. We're not saying they're anything paranormal. But when you hear something on a tape recorder that apparently was not said as it was being recorded and then heard afterwards, I would say that there would be an experience that would fit the paranormal or one of those things that you can't explain. Okay, so here we are at 10 after 7, and I do have a phone caller here. I believe it is our guest author on either that or it's Robin, and I can never remember her phone number. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring up the person. And if it is Kevin Folliard, we'll begin talking with him, and then I'll introduce his book, maybe have a little chit-chat with him before he comes on, or if it's Robin, we'll find out. So the mystery caller is here, and we'll bring him on right about now. Hello there.
Hey, Tom. Sorry to disappoint you. I'm not Robin. That's Kevin.
Robin. You don't have the feminine voice for Robin. What happened with her?
I hope she joins us soon, but in the meantime, I thought maybe you needed someone to talk to, so I decided to call in early.
No, that would be pretty cool. We got about 5 minutes to kill here before I introduce your book. And like I say, Robin is normally here, so I hope she's okay, and I hope we'll be
Definitely.
Hearing shortly. But Kevin, I have to say, and I was going to say this when we opened up our program with you for the review of your book, but I have listened to your voice on a YouTube video that you did for your book, and I find your voice very radio-ish, if you want to call it that. You have a very good speaking voice, and I was wondering if you do any radio work.
Thank you very much. Actually, I have done some acting, and I've done some voice work, but I've never done radio work per se. I've done web cartoons and things of that nature, so I've done voice acting. Never radio.
What type of web cartoons do you do?
I did an independent film a few years back that has a little bit of a cult following among video game fans and gamers. It's called Press Start. And it had a sequel, Press Start 2 Continue. And to promote the films, we did a series of web cartoons that sort of caught on in their own right, and it's called Press Start Adventures through Dark Maze Studios in Champaign, Illinois. So if people go to darkmaze.com, they can see all of those cartoons and hear some of my voice acting.
Oh, cool. Any other
No, it's a lot of fun.
Any stage acting at all, Kevin?
Yeah. I liked acting a lot in high school and college, and then in my adult years, as I was writing and working and doing all these other things, I got involved in some community theater productions. And for me, acting is more of a hobby. I have a lot of friends who are very serious about it and are very, very good at it. But I enjoy doing a show from time to time, and I've done Shakespeare and things like that. So I have some experience with being in front of people or making myself heard and understood. So maybe that's why I have a little bit of an edge when I will, like, do a YouTube recording or something from a book.
Yeah, you did fabulous on that recording. I listened to it several times, and I hope that has helped your sales. I'm sure it probably has, along with being on the Writer's Lounge. I wanted to ask you, since we are talking a little bit about Halloween, and your story has a subject matter that is akin to the spooky side of life, I was wondering if you had done any kind of ghost hunting at all, or how you feel about that, since I just was talking about it.
I've never had an experience that I could say was supernatural or empirically say, well, I have no explanation for that. I find that very strange. But I've always been very fascinated by ghost stories and scary stories, as you can tell from the kind of things that I write about. So I would consider myself not really a skeptic, but I couldn't say that I've had any sort of experience that would be phenomenal, something that I would make a true believer of me, I guess. I'd be interested to have an experience like that. I think it would be very eye-opening. But I have not. I've not done the kind of things that you have you've done, and I find it very interesting. So, I mean, I'm sure you have a lot of great stories like the one you just told about the EVP. So,
EVP, that
very
was
cool.
From somebody else, and then, of course, we do our own EVPs, and we've picked up some rather very interesting EVPs, which I would say you cannot dismiss it as not being a voice. It certainly does sound like a voice. It's very clear, and you know that nobody else was speaking at the time that you pick it up. So the skeptic
right.
me and the skeptic and many people would say, well, somebody in the group said something and you didn't hear them say it. Well, that's not the case, especially when you investigate with usually four to five people at least that are on these teams, and anybody that would, hear you say that it was somebody else or it was probably a ghostly voice when it really wasn't, they would be quick to point out that, you know, don't try to fabricate what just happened here. It was real. So I think it's important, once again, when you do investigate, that you go out in groups so you can hold each one accountable for what's happening, whether it's a voice, an EVP, a spirit orb, as they sometimes call them, when you're picking up something on a video cam or on a camera. So it's important to go in numbers. But anyways, Kevin, let's get on with the review of your book here. And Jay Carter in a Nightmare Gallery was written by Kevin Follier and published by Create Space Independent Publishing Platform in 2012. You may purchase it at Amazon.com Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook. Over at Amazon, they wrote a little bit of a blurb here and a little review of his book, and this is what they had to say. When sixth-grade outcast Jay Carter meets the enigmatic Miss Dr. Shade, his dreams become reality. Shade's miraculous technology grants access to the mental realm of the dreamscape, where anything is possible. Furthermore, Jake discovers that his long-lost twin brother Luke has been serving as Shade's loyal protege for the past 7 years, yet Jake and Luke's reunion is soured by the doctor's nightmarish agenda. Soon, predicting the world of sleeping innocence takes Jake on an adventure past the boundaries of imagination. And that's what Amazon had to say, and what I have to say is the allure and excitement of being young again is something many of us long for, and being able to step into a youthfully charged magical world through the ripened imagination of an accomplished author is one way to achieve the impossible. Kevin Follier has stepped up once again and delivered to his readers a story that will inject a whole lot of fantastical delight and dreamy fright into this Halloween season. His characters of the likable youngster Jake Carter and the evil and sinister Dr. Shade come alive on the page, and the concept of this story contains all of the elements of what holds us to a tale such as this and keeps us wanting more and more, word after word after word. In this story, the dream world and the real world begin to offer equal appeal, and the characters, especially Luke and Jake, are forced to choose in which world they will live. To live in the dream world enables one to create their own world as if one is living in a real-life Sims game, so the allure is very appealing for somebody who has spent hours and hours creating a simulated world like me. But the path of this story leads to a very dark, deceptive plan devised by Dr. Shade that removes all the exciting elements of a magical dream world. So open the door to Kevin Follier's Nightmare Gallery if you dare. You'll be glad you did. And I would now officially like to welcome Kevin on the show to the Writer's Lounge. And Kevin, how is everything going with the book so far?
It's going pretty good so far. Thanks, Tom. That was a great introduction, and I really appreciate the review. It's been a lot of fun to get this book out there. It's something that was definitely a labor of love for a good long while, and it's nice. It's nice to have this done. I've been working on it for about 7 years. There's a lot of me in this book, and it's nice to see people are enjoying it and really getting into it. And I feel like I've just gotten a good opening salvo of reviews on Amazon, and I'm getting a lot of positive buzz from the people who have been checking it out. So I'm very excited about continuing to push this book alongside my other Scary Stories books and just see where things go.
That's perfect. And with that, could you read an excerpt from Jay Carter in the Nightmare Gallery?
Absolutely, I'd love to. Since I have chapter one on, like you said, I have chapter one on YouTube, so I think I'm going to read chapter three, which is a little bit shorter. And in chapter three, the protagonist, Jake Carter, is walking home from school, and he encounters the mysterious Dr. Shade, who has snuck up upon him. So here we go. As Jake approached an alley, the strange man emerged with a flourish of his black coat. Jake stumbled backwards. The man approached, hand outstretched, a sly grin over his face. "Hello, young man." Up close, Jake observed the odd, plastic quality of the stranger's pale skin. His hair hung from his hat in greasy clumps. Jake turned to run, but the man grabbed his arm. "Easy now, I just wanted to give you this." Jake almost screamed, but stopped as the man produced a small, thick black book with a makeshift brown paper jacket from his front pocket, Jake's English book. You dropped it outside the school building, the man explained. Jake sighed. Thanks. He removed his book bag and examined the sealed zipper. He had no clue how the book could have fallen out. Well, here you go. The man flipped the book open and read his name on the inside cover. Jake. Jake reached for his book, but the man withheld, admiring the drawings on the cover. This is exquisite. You like dinosaurs? He turned the book over, following the scene of a Tyrannosaurus attacking a Triceratops. Yes, Jake said. Can I please have my book back? Oh, of course. I'm sorry. He handed it over. You know, I'm an artist myself, and a collector at that. Do you collect things, Jake? Jake didn't answer. He opened his book bag, placed the book inside, and zipped it back up, never once taking his eyes off the strange man. Sorry to be so forward. That's just the kind of person I am. It must be hard being shy, hmm? Jake remained silent. He suddenly wished he had taken a beating from Pete Masters and gone home the normal way. Well, it's hard being different, at least I know that, the man continued. Jake, I teach a class for creative children right here in the neighborhood every Sunday night. Maybe you should stop by sometime. You might find something you're missing. Jake prepared to run. I'm not missing anything, thank you. The stranger laughed. I don't believe that for a second. Just think about it, okay? The man flicked his wrist and produced a business card between his thumb and pointer finger. He stuck it behind Jake's ear and tipped his hat. Good to finally meet you, Jake. The man struck off past Jake and continued down the block. Jake's body relaxed as the distance between them grew. Once the man rounded a far corner, Jake exhaled relief. He pulled the card from his ear and read, Dr. Thaddeus Shade, professional mentor and tutor, 6319 South Adams Avenue, weekly sessions midnight, Sunday evening / Monday morning. The card sported a raised crescent moon and stars. Jake checked again to make sure Dr. Thaddeus Shade was gone. He wondered what a professional mentor and tutor did. Moreover, he wondered what he did to kids at midnight.
Very good. Very good use of intrigue there as you developed the character, introduced the character of Dr. Shade. I think a lot of writers, a lot of readers, I should say, hang on to those kind of, you know, little bits of the story that make you want to go further, and that certainly does the trick there. When you write these stories, I find that, especially when you wrote your first book, Christmas Terror Tales, which is a compilation of several stories, Jay Carter Nightmare Gallery is a novel. And can you tell us, Kevin, the challenges you faced in writing a novel as opposed to a short story?
Yeah, sure. I love writing short stories. I love writing short fiction. And I feel like I have, as a writer, I feel like I'm a less is more kind of guy. So I think short stories come very naturally to me, but I also enjoy writing longer pieces. And there's definitely a difference that I think most writers would agree that novels are, not only are they just longer, but they're more complex because they're longer, because you're spending more time with more characters and there are more story arcs. So there's more characters. There's everyone has their own story arc. Every arc has to be woven throughout the larger piece, and it just makes a more complex animal. So there's a lot of trial and error as you're discovering where things are going and how events unfold. And you need to figure out as you're going what is important, what is not important, where are the themes popping up, what is this book about, and trimming and extending and all of the ins and outs of pacing become very complicated with a novel, whereas in a short story it's really easy to spot those problems. So with Jay Carter and the Nightmare Gallery, and with Christmas Terror Tales as well, but especially this book, I got a lot of help from a lot of writer friends who were willing to read this book in various forms over the course of various drafts, and I owe them a lot for their insights and their valued feedback.
Yeah,
but at the end of the day, you get to make the call. It has to line up to your vision, and only you know what is the most important stuff that has to stay, what is the stuff that needs to be expanded, what is the stuff that has to go. So I guess to sum up, a novel takes a lot more discipline than a short story.
Right. When you go from your first draft to your second draft, as an example, in this shift from a short story to long story, if you will. Was there a lot of change? I mean, how many drafts did you do, I guess I should be asking, before you got to the completion of your work?
Well, Jake Carter is a very unique experience for me, because this story is actually about 7 years in the making, whereas a lot of the other stuff I've made over the past 3 years has from conception to finished product has come along a lot more smoothly. And I think part of it is I just plain wasn't as good a writer 7 years ago. So over the course of many on and off revisions, I'd say probably Jake Carter had to have gone through at least 5 major revisions, a bunch of little revisions along the way.
So basically your first draft would have been several years ago, as you were saying, what, 7 years ago?
7 years ago. It was 2005. I had just gotten out of college, and I was trying to find a job, and I had a degree in English and creative writing. So I wrote this novel. I had these great characters. I had this really cool story, but I wasn't the prose wasn't as good. The pacing wasn't as good. And these are all things that I had to learn through trial and error and just by doing over the course of a long time. So finally, this past year, I took a look at it about end of 2011, beginning of 2012. I said, well, this book is kind of special to me. I think these characters are great. I like this story, but it needs a lot of work. So I had to make that decision. Well, either I'm going to put this down and it's going to be just this manuscript that I wrote a long time ago and I'm never touching it again, or I'm going to make something of it right now. And I kind of went on the other side of things and said, I'm definitely going to make this work. So I'm kind of glad I did. It was a lot of work to take an older manuscript and bring it up to my current standards of writing, but I think it paid off.
Very cool. And if you'd like to give us a call here in the Writer's Lounge, you can do that at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. And we will have you on where you can ask Kevin a question or leave a comment for this up-and-coming author. And Kevin, writers like Stephen King are always asked, so we're going to put you in that realm right now. How do you come up with your ideas, and how did the idea of your book enter your mind, and how long did it take you to write? I know you have to go back 7 years to kind of tell us this, but take us back to conception of Jake Carter.
Sure. I'm glad you mentioned Stephen King, actually, because I think Stephen King has this really great metaphor of fiction writing as being like discovering a fossil. And he talks about this in his book On Writing. You come up with that initial concept, that initial idea, and maybe it's one scene, maybe it's one character, maybe it's one premise of your story, and you're brushing away at your fossil that you found in the desert or wherever you found it, and you find the skull, and then you see, oh, this animal has a neck, this animal has arms, and eventually you uncover the whole animal, but it was a pre-existing animal in Stephen King's methodology, which I really feel like that worked for me. So with Jake Carter and the Nightmare Gallery, what happened is I came up with the character of Jake Carter, who was a lot like I was as a kid, so that was easy to come up with. And I had this idea that he had a dead twin brother, and I wasn't sure quite where I was going with it, and I wrote a couple of chapters about this character and his life. And all of a sudden, this character, Dr. Shade, comes walking down the street, which is that chapter I just read, chapter 3, and suddenly that's when the whole big picture sort of come together. That's when I said, oh, this character, Dr. Shade, knows something about his brother. There's some mystery here. Let's figure out what it is. And it all came together at that moment. Once I brought Dr. Shade into the book, that's how that came together. And I think that's pretty true of how I will write a longer piece these days. 7 years ago when I was writing Jake Carter, The Nightmare Gallery, for the first time, things came together a little more slowly, a little more patchwork. The final version of the rough draft of that book was very different than the one that is now for sale. But I think that I've remained true to that kind of writer where I figure out one thing, or I come up with one character, or I have one premise, and then I'll just try to naturally explore what exists around that premise or around that character and who they are and where they came from and why they are the way they are. And that tends to be how I will make a longer piece work.
Right.
Yeah.
I also know that you employed the closet as part of your story, and that's one of the things I think that all of us writers of horror or Stephen Kingish type fans would kind of relate back to, is the closet happens to be the place where nobody wants to go, or under the bed is another
Absolutely.
One of those places where nobody wants to go. So when you inject that concept or that idea into your story, I think it grows legs, or it grows darkness from there, and
right.
and helps you to move forward in a story. And I think a lot of writers sometimes get caught up in being like somebody else. I'm glad that a lot of the writers that I've been reading here on the Writer's Lounge over the course of the last year and a half have employed their own imaginations. And every now and then you'll find somebody who comes off as Stephen Kingish, or they come off, as another writer of fiction. Those are those little tools that you can use to kind of help you along with your imagination in the beginning, as you did. And I'm particularly interested, Kevin, in the Jake and the Nightmare Gallery seems geared more towards younger readers, even though the appeal of your stories reaches all ages. In fact, I'm 56, and I absolutely loved it. And in your opinion, what do you consider the do's and don'ts when reaching for a younger fan base?
I think that for me, my style lends itself well to kind of a 12 and up crowd. It's very straightforward. It's very, I don't want to say it's simple, because I don't think that does it justice exactly, but it's direct, it's clear, and everyone can understand what's going on in the story. There's no poetic kind of prose, or it's not like a puzzle that you have to figure out what's going on, or stream of consciousness, or some kind of more literary adult style. It's for everyone. It's for kids and their parents. So my thing is, I want to write, just like what you said, I want to write stories that are for everyone, so that someone who's in their 50s can enjoy it, someone who's in their 20s can enjoy it, and someone who's 12 years old can enjoy it. And my big rule of thumb is just don't underestimate kids, and don't talk down to them. And I think a lot of writers, or aspiring writers, or maybe even the publishing industry at large, has a habit of trying to think of kids as a demographic and lumping them into this demographic. And there's only certain things kids are willing to read about. There's only certain kinds of characters and situations kids are excited to read about. But the truth is, the kids are the same as adults. They're all individuals. So some kids are going to like a scary story, and some kids are going to like a romance, and some kids are going to want to read about sports, or some kids are going to read about science. And they're the same as adults. It's just the reading level has changed. So other than not wanting to impart a lot of gratuitous gore or violence or sex or things that are blatantly inappropriate for kids, I would like them to be treated like adults, like individuals. And I think when I was a kid, I always could tell when something was written down to me and when something was written for me to rise up to it a little bit, and I liked the latter better.
I guess I never really thought about it too much, Kevin, but if I remember correctly, I don't think there was one inappropriate word or swear word in your book, was there?
No, there was not. And that was something that's very conscious, because I want, like I just said, I want a book that kids can read, but I don't want it to be one that their parents are going to take away from them on some technicality. So there's no reason to have gratuitous violence or sex or swearing or these sorts of things. These aren't the things that make a story good. They're just the things that make it seem edgy maybe to someone. But what's important for me, especially in a scary story or a sci-fi adventure or a fantasy adventure, is that the danger is real and that the stakes are real, so that kids and adults can become invested in what's going to happen to the characters, so they think that there are real stakes and they want to know how they get out of the situation, or if they get out of the situation that they found themselves in. So if you can't live vicariously through that character, then there's no real drama. No one's going to be interested in the story.
And I think that lends to your expertise as a up-and-coming good writer to be able to do all that and put all of those pieces together to make it a story that's not going to jump out of the, out of, at a parent and trying to decide whether or not they're going to allow Jimmy or Jane to read your book based on
right.
is it appropriate enough. So it's something I don't think I could do because I'm more geared with writing a story that's more geared towards adults. Maybe it's because I don't have children. And I do know that you have a child. I've seen a picture of your child on your
Actually, I don't have children.
Oh, you don't?
That's my goddaughter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's my best friend's daughter. So I have children who are around, but I don't have any of my own, to be honest.
Sure. I kind of took that as you being the dad holding that little baby there. And that was quite remarkable when I was reading your book, thinking that you were in that mindset. But, it's true. We all have kids around us, and we can all relate to them. In fact, I like to say, and just said it today, that I'm still a kid at heart. I've never grown up, and I don't think I ever will. But
yeah, I don't think I will either.
It's a lot of fun being a kid, and I don't ever want it to end. So getting back here to your story, is there any connection between the story and your real life? And did you dream a lot as a kid or even as an adult? Because we know the theme of the book that you wrote is based on dreams.
Yeah. As far as the first half of your question goes, my story is, like I said earlier, Jay Carter he's based in me as a kid. So, and I think that happens with a lot of people's first novels. They write what they know, and what you tend to know when you're a young writer is your own childhood. So Jake is a lot like me, and his situation is a lot like my situation growing up, in that he's growing up on the south side of Chicago. He goes to a Catholic school and all of this, and that's very much like what my childhood was like. But then it sort of ends there, and the bizarre supernatural premises start rolling in. So, I think for me, a lot of my childhood went into Jake and his real-life situation, except, of course, his parents and his friends and his teachers and, you know, the priests in his community and all these people are fictionalized versions of people I've met or stitched together fictionalized versions of different kinds of people that kind of go into my brain and come out the other side as unique characters.
So who would Dr. Shade be?
Well, that's where fiction has to take over.
Because okay.
There was no Dr. Shade in my life, fortunately. I think that would have been a bad thing.
You didn't have a parent Dr. Shade, I'm assuming.
Not at all. My parents were much better than Dr. Shade.
Very good. Yeah, I loved him in the book. Loved him a lot. And speaking of that visual that you gave us in the book, and I could see Jay Carter in the Nightmare Gallery as a movie. Are there any plans in this regard? I know a lot of authors kind of move on to that realm of movie making.
I would love for that to happen. I would just, I don't think I can quite do it on my own. But if someday I would love to have the audience and the following that, maybe you could get me something like a movie deal with an agent or someone who could help me, you know, bring my story to the right person and bring it to film. But I think it's interesting that you say that because I do like to think visually when I'm writing, and I try to have visual staging in mind with the different scenes and the characters and everything that's going on so that the action feels consistent and there's continuity. And I like to do things like draw maps of where everyone is and what's happening. And I think that became very important with this book because a lot of Jay Carter in the Nightmare Gallery does take place while the characters are asleep and they're in these mental realms and they're creating things, environments out of thin air. And there's just an expanse of nothing that is flying out in front of them. So it's a challenge to figure out how do I convey all that staging, all that space to the reader? And thinking of it like a movie kind of helps that, actually.
Yeah, it just brought something to my mind. What did we do in the days as writers before movies, back in the days of Charles Dickens? And we didn't have the movie reel to kind of shift to get a perspective or to frame our story.
Right.
They went with what was around them, literally, with no clues or no prompts from a movie screen. So I find
very
that
true.
Part of being a writer very interesting, too. If you can somehow write a story without thinking of it as a movie, but I know a lot of us do that. In fact, the novel that is not completed that I'm still working on, I've used that also to help me move my story along. So it's pretty interesting how we writers make something happen and use the tools that are around us. And then, of course, I guess my next question would be, sometimes when we sit down to write a story, a character in a novel will take on a mind of their own and control the story and its outcome. And we talk a lot about this on the Writer's Lounge over the course of the last year and a half. And did this happen with this novel? And if it did, who was the most dominant character in your story?
Well, I think we're going to go back to Dr. Shade because, like I said earlier, that scene where Dr. Shade comes up upon Jake sort of walking down the street as the stranger walking down the side street, that's what kicked the story into high gear. And throughout all my different revisions of the book, he's the one who remained the most consistent. His dialogue seemed to come out very naturally. He kind of has a life of his own.
Right.
Which might be a little scary, too.
So did he control your hand on the keyboard? Did he control what you were going to write down as far as what he was going to say or what other characters were going to say to him?
Well, he almost has to, in a sense, if you want to subscribe to the Stephen King fossil metaphor, because if you figure out Dr. Shade is in this story, and Dr. Shade is a pre-existing character that you're learning about, and you want to be consistent with his personality, you have to be true to what he would do, what he would say, and why he would do those things. So in a way, it's hard to argue with what Dr. Shade would do because he is very clear to me in my mind what kind of a villain he is and what kind of evil he is and why he does the things he does, which might not be clear to all my readers, but at the very least, if it's clear to me, it makes him a very consistent character.
Speaking of your mind, Kevin, did he ever invade your dreams?
No, not yet. Only I tend to see him only when I'm awake.
Okay.
In my books.
and I found that it was pretty interesting, if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit with us about the closet that sits in Jake's bedroom. There is an object that sits on his door handle, I believe. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. In the story, in Jake Carter and the Nightmare Gallery, Dr. Shade's home exists almost in its own dimension. There's a little bit of a mystery behind it. But Dr. Shade hosts a class for children, creative children, at midnights and on Sundays. And he gives his students, a brass ring, which he has them hang on their closet doorknob so that when their closet door opens, it opens to Dr. Shade's house rather than to their closet. And we were talking about the closet earlier. It's a very primordial thing when kids are little and they look in the dark closet. They're scared there's a monster there or something. So I think that just lent itself naturally to the whole premise of Dr. Shade as being this kind of boogeyman who lives behind the closet and he's up to no good and he's corrupting young minds and all of this.
Yeah, I think it's really neat that door leads to another portal to another house. I think that is really, really cool.
Yeah, I think there's something primordial about that because I do remember as a kid having dreams where things don't open to what they're supposed to open to. And you see that in science fiction all the time and things like Doctor Who and all of these shows where you can open something up and it's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. And something about that's very fascinating.
Yeah, if not another house or another area, but maybe another world or another time. I often, as a child, would sit on my friend's front porch and just kind of imagine what it would be like if me in the future, probably at the age that I am now, came walking down the street and met me on the porch of my friend's house and what I would say to me when that happened. So I think there's probably a story in there somewhere, too, that I should probably work on. But it's quite fascinating, our imaginations and what
right.
we
well, could
do.
Well, that's what's so cool about fiction writing is you get to make the impossible possible. You get to make a little microcosm where strange and phenomenal things can happen.
Absolutely. How is Christmas Terror Tales doing? I know that we talked a little bit about that earlier.
Yeah, it's doing quite well. Thanks for asking. I know you've got your Facebook following growing, and the same thing's going on for Christmas Terror Tales. We've gotten a lot more fans since last Scary Stories season, and a lot of sales over time, and even during the off season, people are interested in it. So the neat thing about Christmas Terror Tales for me is that there's a built-in audience for scary stories and ghost stories and Halloween and Christmas. So that's a book that almost kind of markets itself for me. So I'm really glad I started my publishing career with Christmas Terror Tales rather than Jay Carter, because now Christmas Terror Tales gets to be kind of the gateway to my other writing that people can
sure.
check out if they're interested.
Yeah. So it did, all of the people that are on that page and all of your fans actually probably pushed you to get this Jay Carter book done. Is that correct?
I would say so. I would say that having an audience definitely motivates you to keep writing. And I had Jay Carter as a manuscript. I have a couple other manuscripts that have been things I've worked on and off for the past few years. And once you break through that barrier of publication and you have something out there that people are enjoying and you can see, well, this is what it was like to go through all the grueling work of editing and proofreading and getting feedback and weighing that feedback and getting a final product, then you know, well, I can do this again. So Christmas Terror Tales was almost like an experiment, and it was a successful experiment, and I'm happy it's out there, and I'm going to keep writing scary stories and also doing the novels and more original things on the side, too.
Yeah, cool. Marketing of your books, any pros or cons within that process that you'd like to share with us?
I think, similar to what I was just saying, as far as marketing goes, it's easy to market a book of scary Christmas stories because it's inherent in what it is. Like, it's very clear to everyone, Christmas Terror Tales, well, that's a book of scary Christmas stories, and either you're going to think that's cool or you're not going to be interested. It's harder to market something like Jay Carter and the Nightmare Gallery, which is why I need to count on people who already know that they enjoy my writing and people who can write reviews and people like you who can help spread the word about what this book is like and what it's about, because it does have kind of a vague premise that's sort of hard to sell to people. But I think it's a much better book than Christmas Terror Tales. It doesn't have that hook. That's been challenging. And I'm hoping to submit it to contests and do things like that to sort of help get the word out about Jay Carter. But in the meantime, it's good to have Christmas Terror Tales and other scary stories that I'm writing that are a little more, that sell themselves a little more, because like I said, people who find one book by one author might go, what else has this guy written? And they can check out Amazon or Google or whatever and find the rest of it.
So there's a lot of writers that have been on the Writer's Lounge, and I have some personal friends who are writers who we get involved in these very long discussions about sometimes frustrations about trying to get the book sold and how do you do it in this world. Can you give us a little example, a couple, ideas of what you would do to, like, maybe when in the course of your day, maybe 2 or 3 hours of your day is spent doing what? I know, I could briefly mention Twitter or Facebook, but what is
sure.
it that you do to actually market your book? Give us some little tidbits there.
Well, I mean, I think you hit on the brunt of what you need to do as far as social networking goes. You got to have Facebook, you got to have Twitter, you got to have a blog, and you got to depend on the kindness of strangers, to quote Tennessee Williams. So people who you can get the word out to, you sort of have to hope that they're going to help keep spreading that word. So friends and family and everyone who you can get to testify that you've written something cool. So on top of the social networking, I try to get my books into local bookstores and get involved in the community and do readings. I have Jake Carter and Christmas Terror Tales at some excellent stores around the Chicagoland area. In the western suburbs, there's Chimera's Comics and LaGrange and Frugal Muse Books and Darien, where I've done readings for Christmas Terror Tales. And when people walk in the store and they hear you reading a scary story, that gets them interested, and that makes them want to buy it for their nieces or nephews or whoever. And I have a store on the south side of Chicago where I grew up, which is where Jake Carter and Nightmare Gallery takes place, called The Bookies, and they've been great about helping to sell books, and I've been sending business their way, and it's kind of a you scratch my back, I scratch your back situation with all these local businesses. So social networking is great. Amazon is great. All these things are wonderful because they help you reach all these readers who are all across the country. But I think you got to do both. I think you got to get involved in your community, and you also have to do the online networking too.
Cool. I also have to mention that in any of the books that these up-and-coming authors are writing, one of the first things that they notice, obviously, would be the cover. And I absolutely love the cover for Jake Carter. I think it's fantastic. It's simple, and it gets the idea, it gets the point across of the story in sort of a geometrical shapes on your page there. I thought that was really interesting. Can you tell us how you decide what artwork you will go with?
Well, the trick actually is that I don't let myself make the final call. I work with a really terrific Chicago area artist, JT Malloy, who also happens to be my cousin.
We are
very good at collaborating. And he's an artist.
You gotta have a plug for Cuz.
Absolutely. But he's a really good visual thinker. He's a really talented artist. So typically, I mean, I can think visually too. Like I was just saying, I like to think of staging and maps and things as I'm writing, but I know my limitations. I know he's the artist, I'm the writer, and if I'm doing a scary stories book like Christmas Terror Tales, which he also illustrated, or if I'm designing a cover, I sort of give him my premises, my ideas, and I say, well, do something kind of like this, and he might say, oh, that's a great idea, I'll do something very similar to that, or he might say, I don't want to do that, I'm going to do something else, and I usually let him just do what he's going to do, and I don't think I've ever been disappointed. He came up with this concept of this very, like you said, very geometric, very simple. And I agree. I love the cover for Jake Carter and the Nightmare Gallery. It's the kind of cover that is very eye-catching. And you also are going to read the book, and you're going to look at the cover again when you're done, and you're going to think of it differently than you thought of it when you first saw it, which I think is neat.
Absolutely. We got a little over 7 minutes here. Once again, if you'd like to give a call quick, here at 626-213-5613 or toll free at 877-878-1436 and leave a question or comment with Kevin. We'd appreciate it. But as we move along here, Kevin, I just would wonder if you could sit down and talk with one famous person, who would it be and what would be the first question you would ask them? I find this question very intriguing to somebody who is a creative mind like yourself and other writers and other creative people out there. I just wonder who that person would be.
That is such a good question, and I wish I had a really good answer to it. I think I'm the kind of person who, when I meet someone famous or someone who I really respect, I get very nervous. So, I mean, I'd love to meet some of my favorite authors, people like Tolkien or Dickens or Poe or Stephen King or Michael Crichton. But I think I would, like, not know what to ask them. I think I'd just be like, thank you for entertaining me for many years. And
okay, so I'm going to set it up for you here, Kevin.
Okay.
There's a doorway, and you're in a hotel, and it's funny because we talk about the doorway. Imagine a closet, if you will. And
uh-huh.
You open it up, and there in the room, seated at a table, with only a table in the middle of it, is the man himself, Stephen King. And the door closes, you walk in. What are you going to say to him?
Well, I guess I'd say hello, I'm Kevin Folliard, and how are you doing today? Or something very introductory like that. And I try to, as gracefully as possible, broach the topic of writing so that I could get some valuable insight from him that he's not yet shared with me through his writing and through his is writing about writing. So,
sure.
So yeah, I guess it's hard for me to come up with that burning question because I love Stephen King. I think he's a brilliant writer, and he has so many insights to offer. And I feel like just from having read it, On Writing is one of my favorite books about the topic, and from having read it several times, I feel like I'm not sure what else he has to say that I need to know that isn't.
I've actually got that book myself, so I know what you're referring to. Yes, some really good bits of information in there.
Right.
Yep. Okay, Kevin, we're getting to the end of the program here. I can't believe I've actually done this without my sidekick, but we're going to have
you
to check on her and make sure she's okay. So she hasn't walked into any closets somewhere and disappeared into another dimension, but we'll check with Robin, and I'm sure she's fine. She probably got caught up in doing something, or she just forgot. So we will work
on
that.
Or it could be technical problems, or who knows, yeah.
Could be technical problems, maybe a dead phone or whatever the case may be.
Right.
What other books are planned for you in the future, and where can people find you on the, as they used to call it, I don't know if they call it this anymore, but the World Wide Web?
I think we still call it that here. It's kind of going out of fashion a little bit, but it is still the World Wide Web.
Sure.
The first thing I want to mention is I have a brand new Kindle exclusive story that I just made free this week. So Monday through Friday, I have a free story. It's called Christmas Terror Tales Presents Below. And it costs $0 until Friday. So I want everyone to check that out. It's a very cool, scary Christmas story. It's different from the other Christmas stories in the original Christmas Terror Tales because it's a longer piece. So it kind of gives you an idea of what Jake Carter is like, and it also gives you an idea of what Christmas Terror Tales is like. So I hope people will check that out at no cost and see if I'm the kind of writer they might be interested in reading more from.
Very good.
And other than that, I have got stuff coming up next year. I hope to have another young adult novel and another scary stories book, so I'll let everyone know about that as they get closer.
You're going to delve into the adult area of writing spooky stories?
Well, I think the story that I just put on Kindle, it verges on adult. It's about an adult character in a very frightening situation, but it's not, like I said before, it's more, it's got that kind of 12 and up. If you're 12 and up, you're going to be able to handle it. So I can't think of a scary story I've got inside me that's going to be so adult that I can't let kids read it yet.
Right.
I've not quite gotten to that point. Because when I was a kid, I was the kind of kid who always wanted to read the more intense scary stories, and I found that there was like, there's R.L. Stein, and then there's Stephen King, and there aren't a lot of people in between him. So one of my goals is to be someone who can kind of bridge that gap for kids who are interested in horror.
Yep, that's probably a good way of going about it. Well, Kevin, once again, you've been on the Writer's Lounge for the second time here, and hopefully we'll hear from you again and keep promoting our show and make sure you plug in the widget on your favorite website or Facebook, and our numbers are increasing here, folks, and if you want to get to Kevin's interview, you can always go to the archives and listen to him later on, but the numbers have been spiking up around 1,500 listens in 2 weeks, so Kevin, I think you're going to have a lot of people out there listening to our show, and once again, I want to thank you again, and I want to wish you a very happy and scary Halloween.
Thanks, Tom. You too. It's always a pleasure.
Okay. Talk to you later, bud.
All right. Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Okay, folks, that brings us to another conclusion of the Writer's Lounge. This is show 33. Next time up, Mick Ridgewell with his story. And that would be, let me get back to the page here, and that would be The Nightcrawler, another spooky tale right before Halloween. In fact, that will be on October 29th. And also, I forgot to mention, October 29th, we will be opening up our next session from December through March. So if you got stories and you got books out there that have been published and you want to be in the Writer's Lounge, TWL11 at yahoo.com. And as we always say here in Writer's Lounge, good reading and good writing, and we'll see you next time.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. But it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will